Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. This week on Bruderhof Radio...
The most basic way of talking about it is that we go to places, prisons, juvenile sites...
And always with the same purpose of just shattering some of the most ridiculous stereotypes and the mentality of, you know, we should just lock them up and throw them away the key...
The common perception of prisoners, as you know, is murderers, rapists, child molesters, violent people who deserve to be kept in. It's a very, very narrow stereotype, which all prisoners are aware of.
You know, if you really go deeply into the artistic process, it has a very transformative power. Art provides a process of growth and development and self-realization that is extremely beneficial and healing.
Across America, prison populations explode as politicians play tough on crime and the war on drugs escalates. At the same time, prisoners' rights are under increasing attack as states curtail legal and civil rights, reduce educational opportunities, and pander to powerful guard unions. But amid the growing prison industrial complex, there are groups working to change attitudes towards prisoners, reminding the public that not all prisoners are violent criminals and drug kingpins. One such group is the Prison Creative Arts Project, or PCAP, based at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. By holding art, theater, and writing workshops in juvenile detention centers and medium-security prisons throughout Michigan, the Prison Creative Arts Project shatters the conventional stereotypes of how inmates think and act. By giving prisoners a voice, PCAP challenges us to rethink our attitudes towards crime, punishment, incarceration, and rehabilitation. Today, we'll hear the philosophy and practice of PCAP from professors and students at the University of Michigan. Buzz Alexander, an English professor, started the Prison Creative Arts Project in 1990. Janie Paul teaches art at the university and holds art workshops in Michigan prisons. Caitlin Smith and David Lee are students at Michigan.
We're located in the English department. The two courses in the English department are English 310 and English 319. And in 310, we work mainly with youth in Detroit and in four juvenile sites. And in 319, we work with the same groups. And the prisons. And those are English department courses. They're very respected. We get high enrollments. Janie Paul in the School of Art and Design teaches a similar course, Art 454, called Art Workshops in Prisons. And she sends art students and others out to the prisons to lead art workshops. You asked about the mission, which basically is what are we trying to do? And the most basic way of talking about it is that we go to places, prisons, juvenile sites. We go to some Detroit high schools that are underserved or whatever the current phrases are now. And we create, we open spaces there that don't exist unless we come. And in those spaces, through the particular method we use, which I can talk about, we make it possible for people to create their own work and to discover what that is that they want to create, what they want to say, what they want to say to an audience. We emphasize performance or readings or presentations so that the people working with us and they really work with us so that we're also included in these shows and plays and so on, have a chance to be applauded, have a final success. It's not simply a workshop that has a good process. It's a workshop that has an outcome with an audience and sales, you know, and things like that. So the mission is to take a very powerful method and to take the arts to places where they don't exist and to trust the people there to take advantage of them. Our mission is not to teach. We don't talk of ourselves as teachers. Our mission is not to go in as elite, advantaged, relatively wealthy people from a major university and bring the benefits of our knowledge in some charitable way to people who don't have it. Our sense is that the people we go to work with are powerful, talented, remarkable people with experiences that are in many ways profounder and more interesting or as interesting as ours, who are, and many of them know this, who are ready to transform this into art and get all the gains that you get from transforming your own experience into art. We don't bring in plays to be performed. All of our plays are created by the prisoners and improvised all the way. We never write down a script. Normally it's once a week, an hour and a half to 2 hour workshop. And at the beginning of a typical workshop, we just go in, and especially if it's new, nobody knows anybody else, there will be a lot of fun games, warm-ups, silliness, improvisations, and this will go on for several weeks, so everybody just loosens up and, you know, realizes that this is going to be a different kind of environment, and they get to laugh with each other. And then over the next several weeks, we gradually deepen the kinds of improvs we do in order to begin to discover material. We teach, we give people exercises that enable them to draw upon their own realities. We have conflict, say, come up with a conflict and pair off with somebody, and the two of you act it out, and so on. And either out of those exercises or just out of a discussion, we figure out what the play is going to be about, and then if somebody has an idea, we'll say to him or her, okay, choose as many other people as you want and show us the first scene that's in your mind. And they take 5 or 10 minutes, and they come back, and they act out a scene. And everything follows from that, because we then have another scene with two of the same characters, or we figure out what other characters are necessary. And in the plays that I do, because I've had a lot of experience, my partner and I, we usually have an hour and a half to 2 hour improvised play 3 months later.
The theater workshop's basically just a space for these people to really be themselves and use their own voice and use their own creativity. And we basically let them, we just sit there and facilitate the group, basically. We'll do like some activities to start out with, and then it's all their own ideas for the play. Anything they want it to be about, and we just kind of watch it come together, basically, and help out when needed.
It's a little different with art, I think. It's the same philosophy. So the philosophy that's the same is that we are facilitating individual discovery and growth in art. The thing that's different is that there's a lot of actually artwork that's being done in the prisons already when we come in. And there's also a lot of skill involved in the kind of work that most people want to do. So we do teach those skills, and we bring in we provide the materials. We either I usually get a grant for the class that I teach. We scrape together money in various ways, but it's pretty limited, you know. We bring in a lot of reference material and try to widen people's understanding. What I mean by that is, you know, reproductions of paintings and drawings and different kinds of art, and stimulate people's ideas and imaginations. We do various kinds of exercises and activities to get people's minds going. So we try to sort of start off with a lot of that kind of thing, and then as people catch on to an idea that they want to develop, then we try to encourage each person's work. You know, we might have two volunteers going in with a group of, say, 12 people, and after the first few weeks when, you know, we've done a lot of work with different kinds of skills, and people start on their own projects, you know, then the volunteers go around and kind of help everybody individually try to realize what it is they want to do, whether it's a painting or a drawing or a collage, or, you know, and they'll say, oh, I really want to use, you know, an African mask. Can you bring in a library, you know, a book? And so we'll go and look for a book to bring in, you know, because they, you know, they don't have any resources in terms of visual aids, you know, or we might look at someone's work and think, oh, they could really benefit by looking at, you know, Thomas Hart Benton's paintings, or, you know what I mean? It might remind us And then we would bring that in, and they would see, oh, what I'm doing has a relationship to this artist, and this is what they did. And so I think it's also a matter of trying to widen their understanding and connection so they find that they have a place, and what they're doing has a place in art, in the history of art.
We do creative writing. It's something I didn't want to do at first because, as you'd probably guess, a lot of people in prison write and fancy themselves writers, and it was just like we would be inundated with writing coming through the mail and requests and so on, and we get some of that, but it hasn't been bad. And we've recruited people from the Master of Fine Arts in creative writing here at Michigan, which is an excellent program, and 4, 5, 6 of the creative writers are doing workshops or have entered into sharing their work with talented writers in prison. We've implemented some of that. And then we also have people coming through our courses, or people want to do it, doing creative writing workshops in a number of the prisons. And those end up with readings and anthologies. We have a lot of anthologies that have come out. What we do, and not every volunteer group does this, but they should, is we are extremely tough-minded on our own volunteers. When somebody takes one of our classes, and it's usually our classes at the university that train people to do this, when they interview for the class, or when somebody comes to us from outside that process to work with us, we are adamant about what they're going to do when they go in there. They are going to obey every rule. They're not going to take notes out, even if they like the prisoner and want to be helpful. They're not going to say the wrong things. They're going to be very, very polite and respectful, not only to the men and women in the workshops, but to all staff. And that goes a long, long way. First of all, it's the way you should behave in any environment. And secondly, we have a very good reputation for the way we work and the responsibility we take. And that enables us to be in a system that's suspicious and often hostile towards outsiders. It enables us to be in the workshops doing the lively and often powerful work that we do in the workshops. So we're respected as a volunteer group because we're tough-minded. Our work is very good for maintaining a safe environment in prisons. That is, we're good for security. People who do the workshops are motivated. They want to be in the workshop and so on. And many people most people who work in prisons know this. That is, they like programs. Sometimes for our reasons, and sometimes and most often for their own security-minded reasons. The reason it doesn't happen very much, one is, of course, public perception and pressure. Prisoners are not, they're there to be punished. They've done bad things. I mean, we're very rabid about that in the United States right now. They don't deserve programs, they don't deserve education, they don't deserve weight rooms, they don't deserve televisions. More and more things are taken away from them. This has certainly been true in Michigan. And even the very best people running the prisons are prey to this. They don't always make those decisions. They come from state legislatures, and they come from fear that if they implement too many things, state legislatures will come down upon them, or there will be letters from victims' organizations or angry citizens and so on. It's really a time of terror about that. So that's one answer. Another answer is that, and this is more cynical and I think also real and sometimes less direct, we have, of course, as everybody who's looked at this knows, a huge economic investment in having people incarcerated now. Incredible amounts of money are being made by very specific groups of people. Private prison companies, until recently, have been very, very high in the stock market, good investments, and so on. Therefore, you don't want prisoners to get out, or you don't want them to get out in a state of mind that enables them to stay out. You need to keep those beds filled. So if you remove prisons further and further from where the family members can visit the inmates, you take education away, you take away the kinds of things that have been demonstrated to help prisoners be ready to enter the workforce and to get back with their families and all of that. If you eliminate all those things and make them difficult, you're going to have prisoners coming back. It's the kind of thing that I and probably you could go on about for a long time, but I think that's one reason. It's more subtle, but it's a reason that programs aren't encouraged.
You're listening to members of the Michigan Prison Creative Arts Project on Bruderhof Radio. Our guests are Buzz Alexander and Janie Paul, professors at the University of Michigan, and Caitlin Smith and David Lee, their students.
I think that something that we've been talking about a lot actually recently, art has its own transformative power that I think is very, very forceful. We don't see ourselves as art therapists or, you know, drama therapists. We're all artists. And I think that, but I think that doing art for anyone has a, you know, if you really go deeply into the artistic process, it has a very transformative power. And especially in prison, where it's such an extreme situation where you're in a totally, you know, barren environment and you want to, you know, if you have a desire to sort of go down into yourself to try to bring out what's positive, art provides a process of growth and development and self-realization that is extremely beneficial and healing. And I would, you know, caution on the word healing. It's healing as art. I mean, and then I think that whatever else is rehabilitative, you know, can take place. People are kind of opened up by in the process of making art. And then there are other things also that would go into their own personal process of change, you know, in their life. But I think I see art as kind of being very central in, you know, that kind of discovery and change.
We are skirting this very, very fine line with the Department of Corrections right now. And to call ourselves rehabilitative people or I don't know, to in any way imply that we're therapeutic has a negative connotation for them because we're not trained professionals. We're not trained in psychotherapy or anything like that. So that allows them an excuse to shut us down, basically. But what I will say is that the freedom that we provide prisoners and from anecdotes and the testimonials that we get from the people we work with, we are an amazing outlet for them. Are we the only reason for success when they get out on the outside? I don't know if we could take credit for that. In fact, I'm skeptical to hear people even try to take credit for it because so many things in a person's life have to come together in order for them to be successful. I think because we're different from the regular humdrum of incarcerated life, I think that in itself has its own sort of benefits. Lowering rates of recidivism is something I think we're trying to figure out how to address in order to speak diplomatically with the Department of Corrections. And I'd love to believe we contribute to helping people, but so many issues are involved. I can tell you one anecdote is there's a boy I worked with at Boysville at the Juvenile Detention Center, and he just took everything we gave him and just ate it up. I'd love to say he's my greatest success story. I just loved working with him. He was incredibly talented, incredibly articulate. He did fundraisers with his poetry. It was just so powerful and so good. And when he came out of Boysville, so many things came together for his life. An uncle had stepped into the picture, had gotten him a job, gotten him school. Somehow he had gotten a church support. Everything had come together. And now he's a 4.0 student, captain of the basketball team. He's just doing so many amazing things back in his own community. He's writing me these great letters. And I know pretty confidently I had very, very little to do with that success. But at the same time, I was lucky enough to be there as he gobbled up every exercise that we gave him and just took with it and ran, you know? So it's a tough one. I don't know how to give you a strong answer. I'd love to say, yeah, we are therapy. We are super supportive. We are an outlet for people incarcerated, and we help restore a sense of humanity, I guess, a sense of dignity that has so often been assaulted in their incarcerated life. But At the same time, I also wonder how much of it can we really take credit for.
We, like everybody who knows other human beings close up, including people who work regularly in the prisons, know that the prisoners are complex people like the rest of us, that many of them have talents. We know that many of them have been hurt and have done some hurting like the rest of us. And we know they have families. We know they cry for their children. We know they want to be back and figure out how to be with other people in society. And the common perception of prisoners, as you know, is murderers, rapists, child molesters, violent people who deserve to be kept in. It's a very, very narrow stereotype, which all prisoners are aware of. We come in and they say, what do people think of us? Do they all hate us out there and so on? They know what the popular mind is doing to them. What happens, especially with the annual art exhibition we do, which is an exhibition that this year had 118 prisoners from 35 prisons showing about 225 works of art in three galleries at the University of Michigan. When people walk into the room and see the art, which is not what they imagined. They imagined the gloomy prison scenes and so on, and they see the landscapes and portraits and fantasies and the artists who could sell their work anywhere. They literally turn around. They say, I had no idea. They write comments in the visitors register saying, you have taught me so much, you know. So this breaks the stereotype. So it's a very, very big part of what we do. Our larger purpose is to help stop incarcerating so many Americans, and that's something that any decent American should want to do. We should not be the nation in the world that incarcerates most of its, the highest percentage of its people. It's small in terms of the huge issue of so much incarceration and so much money being involved, but it's our experience is that there are a lot of really remarkable people all over this country doing the same work we are in small ways, and it's hopefully it'll add up to something. We'll have a much smaller prison population soon.
I mean, one of the purposes of the art show is to break down stereotypes. People come into the gallery and they see these amazing artworks, and they think, oh, they're just going to see this kind of tattoo violent art, you know, and they see all these beautiful landscapes and portraits and abstract work, as well as images of prison and you know, some images of brutality and things like that. But it's extremely diverse and inspiring. And I think that besides the content of the work, the other thing that strikes me is that the work is, by and large, extremely carefully done with a lot of intensity. And so people feel the care with which people have created the art. And so that immediately kind of makes people question their image of who prisoners are. It has to make you think, you know, this is a human being who has called this up out of themselves, you know, to put it down on canvas or paper.
This is very, very supported by the university. We are regarded as an organization now, especially with the 5 years of the art exhibition and all the plays and workshops we've done, as really having achieved an organization within the university that's put in place what the university is now feeling its way towards in terms of consolidating what they call community service efforts.
And we've developed the Speakers Bureau, where we actually go out and speak to community leaders, just people, anybody's willing to listen to us, really. We've gone to classes, and it's really, I've done them so many different ways now, and always with the same purpose of just shattering some of the most ridiculous stereotypes. And the mentality of, you know, we should just lock them up and throw them away the key. I mean, everybody seems to subscribe to this tough on crime and how politically incorrect it is to be, you know, soft and to be supportive. And they don't like the idea of having to make excuses, even though, well, I think the reason why is because it's convicting. If you make excuses for people saying things like it's not a person's fault that he goes to school where there's, you know, absolutely no support, and then he comes home are working 3-4 jobs just because of, you know, they can't support themselves. And whatever ills that this society seems to have, it's convicting to say that there's an excuse for it. And it's easier to simply say they've committed wrong when others could have risen. And they're absolutely wrong people. I don't know. Someone quoted Sister Helen Prejean when we did a speaker's bureau saying, it's awful how the people who are incarcerated are now labeled, defined, and identified by the very worst moment in their lives. And their ability to be dynamic human beings is gone, and we now consider them ex-cons. Shattering that stereotype is one of the things that I absolutely love about PCAP. And every time we go out, I bring their poetry. I bring plays, videotapes of plays, artwork. It's overwhelming, and it gets discouraging when you get this resistance where people are like, yeah, I just think some people get enough in prison, and some people, you know, they've got a bed and a house and food, and they're sometimes better than what other people would be receiving. And it's very difficult for them to realize that what we've done in our society is try to remove them and forget about them.
Personally, by going in and doing these things, I've learned a lot about who our society's decided to lock up. And it's really sad and it's really hard, I think, for me to go in some nights. I mean, I get really, not frustrated with the guys, but just what I see, because they're very talented and they have a lot to say. And we don't give them that voice, you know, in our society. And by doing the PCAP, it really allows them to, you know, let go and use their creativity and let their voice be heard.
This is Bruderhof Radio. You've been listening to members of the Prison Creative Arts Project discuss their work. Our guests today were Buzz Alexander, Janie Paul, Caitlin Smith, and David Lee, all of the University of Michigan. For more information about the Prison Creative Arts Project, visit them on the web at www.prisonarts.org. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information about Bruderhof Radio and the Bruderhof Communities, call 1-800-778-8461. That's 1-800-778-8461.